All right, welcome to a very special bonus episode of the RSM podcast. We wanted to get this in because today is May 5th. Yesterday was May the 4th, and tomorrow will be May the 6th. May the 4th is a traditional Star Wars geekery day where we all pass each other in the halls and say, "May the 4th be with you." And some people celebrate Revenge of the Fifth, but some people like to give Cinco de Mayo its day and then come back and celebrate on Revenge of the Sixth. So whether you're celebrating with us on Revenge of the Fifth tonight or Revenge of the Sixth tomorrow, all hail the Imperial Army. So yeah, as you guessed it, we are doing a Star Wars movie today. This is the Star Wars holiday special. With me, as you can hear, is Mike on the other end of the microphone here, and him and I are quite enchanted with this magical little piece of art history here. My brother Declan here is with us. He is in the process of watching the holiday special in double time right now.
Blurp.
And he'll be joining us in the conversation as soon as he's finished to give us his impressions. Mike, do you remember the first time that you saw this holiday special?
Oh, man. yeah. It was my brother who showed it to me because he knew I was, like, huge into Star Wars, and he was, too. And I remember it was actually on Christmas Day. And he said, yeah, and he said, "This is by far the best Star Wars movie that will ever be released," is how he prefaced
oh,
it.
Oh, what a dick.
And so, you know, I was really excited because I had seen the first one, and I actually hadn't seen all three yet, but I had seen the first one. So I was like, "Oh man, you know, there's more to come. This is going to be great." And then it happened. And my world was shattered, and I figured the next two movies were going to be just terrible. The series was
ruined. I'm surprised he didn't, like, literally ruin it for you, saying, you know, no thanks, I'm not going to watch any more Star Wars.
Oh, well, you know, it did break my heart. And then my dad was kind of laughing in the background, and he's like, the ones after this one isn't so bad. You'll like them. And so, like, that kind of rejuvenated me enough to at least try the next two. But yeah, that was my experience.
Oh man. I will say that I have seen maybe 20 minutes of this once before. Maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I tried watching it and I just could not get through it. And so I gave it the good old college try this week here. And whew, that was a chore. With the exception of maybe 20 minutes of footage, this movie, if you're a Star Wars fan, and I think probably double if you're not a Star Wars fan, is probably one of the most hardest movies I've had the chance to try and get through.
Yeah, it's not easy. I will say that for the real hardcore, like, Star Wars historian types that like all to know, like, how everything falls together, there is a couple things that the holiday special introduces into Star Wars lore, albeit very poorly, that makes it worth maybe, like, glancing over certain portions. But otherwise, yeah, just stay away from this movie.
Yeah, it's terrible. And, I mean, we'll get to talking about some of the things that it did introduce into the lore. But spoiler alert that the film itself is not canon to the universe, listeners. It is shunned by Lucas himself, the man who made Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, shuns this movie, and basically has said previously that had he a sledgehammer and a teleporter, he would go around and destroy every physical copy of this ever known to man. But then the internet came out. Yeah. And there is actually not a single physical copy of this left, I don't think.
I highly doubt it.
Yeah, it's never going to be re-released. It had a very short run, and It has only lived on through bootlegging and peer-to-peer networking and people just sharing it because of how ridiculous. Like, we cannot let the world forget that this happened. So
it aired one time.
Yep, and never again.
But it happened.
So, Mike, before we get into all that, have you prepared some poignant ideas on what's going on in the times around this time this movie was created?
Yes, there's a couple things that are relevant to the movie itself, and also just a couple of gold nuggets for those listeners that have already listened to some of our podcasts. So I'm going to start in 1971. We have an official ban via radio and television on cigarette advertisements. This is very important because those advertisements then shifted to movies because they could pay actors and actresses and studios to have their cigarettes in the movies.
We talked a little bit about that last week on Runaway.
Yes, yes. In 1971, we see President Richard Nixon end the gold standard for monetary policy, which was a huge shock to the U.S. And you'll even hear some people who are old now talk a little bit about how terrible it is that our money isn't associated with gold. So that happened before this movie released. 1975, the television series Wheel of Fortune Saturday Night Live premiere on NBC, which is important because this kind of sets the tone for what happens later in television and movies. We have a little bit more of these 30-minute sort of entertainment specials that are comedy-related or talk shows and prize-winning stuff. In 1977, Elvis Presley, king of rock and roll, age 42, dies. So, again, a little important tidbit, the music genre that was available and listened to of the era and is very prevalent in this Star Wars holiday special. And then
it's sort of you feel the lead up to the release of MTV a few years later.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And then in 1977, we see Atari become the first successful home game entertainment system. Popularizes like the use of microprocessors and hardware and cartridges for games. You can start playing video games at home. This is important for the holiday special as well.
I definitely agree. And not only in the technology that is showcased, but in the graphic quality of said technology.
Yep.
So do you have just sort of an overall take on this special, your thoughts on what the special reminds you of or like how it's created?
A lot of people just call it Star Wars Holiday Special. And I think that is part of why it comes across as so crappy. I would call it a science fiction musical number, because like I was talking about before with Elvis Presley's death, this holiday special was a lot more about music than it was really about even Star Wars lore. You have people show up, but every single scene is usually transitioned with either a musical bit or some sort of comedy sketch. I feel like that would be the best way to summarize it, is a science fiction musical.
Yeah, I sort of echoing the, the main zeitgeist of the 1970s is the imperial, all-seeing, all-powerful government that's just terrible, that'll come into your house and wreck your stuff because they're looking for terrorists and all about the love of friends and people willing to stand up against the big corporate entity. It's definitely echoing of the time that it was created, even though it's done poorly. If we're just going to take a short break here, and I'm going to get Declan joined into the conversation, and we'll get his thoughts on it before we begin here.
Sounds great.
This is where we would put an ad if we were sponsored.
Today we're selling Dick Fungal Foot Cream.
What's the name of that product?
It's called Dick Fungal Foot.
And we are back. Declan has joined us after watching his double time holiday special run through. So tell us how you really feel, Declan.
It was tedious, but I really liked the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to give it to him for doing a movie that's about three quarters no dialogue, but with dialogue, causing you to be empathetic to the character the entire time. If you have any interest of what's going on in the show, and just the same as they had so many things in it that you're kind of like, what the fuck? Like, what are they doing? How does that make any sense? But they could get away with it because you're like, oh, they just talked about it. Like, they just explained it to you, but you don't speak fucking Wookiee.
Yeah.
So, but then they also went to the extra extent to say, you know, hey, we're not going to put subtitles in this movie.
Like, yeah.
True.
It would have derailed the reality of it because there are no subtitles in the Star Wars universe.
Very true. Yeah, actually, that's one of the things I was going to talk about was, like, in the introduction, like, you see these Wookiees, and it's like, okay, cool, we're going to have some, like, some Wookiee sort of screen time, and we don't usually see that because they can't have meaningful dialogue.
And it's, like, seven minutes of Wookiee just roaring at each other.
Yeah. And so I feel like what happened here was a film student had, like, this grand idea, and they're like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to bring back that old school, like, box story model that was originally developed by the Renaissance era Europeans, where there were stories in a box that were contained in their own stories, but then would project out to the next scene and so on and so forth, with, like, literally actors that only did method acting and no actual language dialogue. So, like, they had to convey all their emotions through actions and very little understandable vocalization. I thought that was kind of both cool and, like, they tried way too hard to do it.
Yeah, it was like the movie was like a one big interpretive dance.
Yeah.
Yes. Which,
you know, it's kind of that transition from the older movies to the newer movies of people getting away from doing stage acting on film and doing film acting on film.
Yeah. It's a different mentality completely. Absolutely. I feel like the holiday special could have been done on stage.
Yeah, yeah. It probably should have stayed there. I'm sure Lucas would have been happier if there was no videotape proof that this ever happened. So, like we said, immediately we have 7 minutes of just Wookiees bantering back and forth, and we do get a slight glimpse into Wookiee gender roles as Itchy, Grandpa Wookiee, sits on the couch whittling away at little X-Wing fighters, and Mama Wookiee, Mala. Yeah.
Grandpa Itchy, by the way.
Yeah, Grandpa Itchy, Mama Mala. And she's cooking in the kitchen. She's got an apron on, which, you know, I can kind of understand. But, you know, Wookiees don't care about getting mud in their genitals while they're running out in Kashyyyk. So
she's got a house to clean, bro.
But at any rate, then we have Little Lumpy, the child Wookiee. Being a child and a
little douchebag child at that.
Oh, they go, yeah. Well, they go through you know, great lengths to show that
the whole time, like, holy shit.
Well, they go through great lengths to show that Wookiee kids aren't too much different from you kids at home, so you can still relate to this, and you know, it'll be a holiday thing, and you'll want to watch this next year with your parents.
Only that little Wookiee could tear your little kid's arm off.
Exactly. So, yeah, we get the look at the Wookiee gender roles, and the first bit of interesting technology in this special is regular old cassette tapes that project holograms.
Hell yeah. Cartridges.
Yeah, and it was this weird holographic circus that went on for about another 5 minutes of the film.
Which, again, was a pretty cool concept. It was the same tape. It was like a holo table, so, like, you could play chess and you could do other things on it. It was a pretty cool concept to kind of take the holo table and do something else with it.
Rather than just playing chess on it.
Right.
Yeah, and how, like, willing the parents were, basically the grandpa and the mom, were too willing to, like, basically ignore the child when he was acting out. Like, just, like, Yeah, yeah, it's okay that you're being really annoying and, you know, you're playing with your little wooden X-Wing. He just randomly decides to go outside because, you know, right. The parents aren't actually watching him. And then he attempts to, like, commit little Wookiee suicide by climbing up on top of the rail. And, like, for people who don't know Star Wars, I guess we should, like, describe, like, Kashyyyk is this giant forest with these trees that definitely rival and surpass the red oaks in, like, California. Like, these things go up for miles and miles into the air. And this little shit is on a railing, like, several miles up from the ground, walking along the rail.
Testing his Wookiee instincts.
Yeah. Right.
So moving on, then we get a little Mark Hamill in our lives. And Mala calls up Mark Hamill to wonder where Chewie and Han are because they haven't gotten there yet. We get this really forced scene out of Mark Hamill where he's just staring directly at the camera and you can just like see the powder makeup on his face. The steam pouring out of the gun that he's working on, engine that he's working on, is most definitely coming out of a fog machine.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, I think, a single engine of an X-Wing, because they kind of show the X-Wing's engine off when the little Wookiee's running around to, like, advance the story and plot. So you see, like, that same thing reappear. And, yeah, Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, in all of his, like, perfect face glory with all of that powder masking any like baggy eyes or anything, and in fact reflecting camera light to the point where it blinds you a little bit. Yeah, and then you also get to see R2-D2. He's like sitting over there like beeping and booping and doing his thing.
Yeah, telling him, hey, pay the fuck attention to what we're doing. We're repairing a goddamn engine and it's live apparently.
I don't have time for that right now, R2.
Yeah, he's like, hey, R2, can you hold on to that for me? And he's like, no, asshole, I don't have opposable thumbs.
Can we also just talk about the fact that Mala's like, beep, boop, beep, beep, bring. Hey, savior of the universe. Yeah, where's my husband? Have you talked to him recently? We're like best friends now because, you know, you're and my husband know each other. Mark Hamill's also kind of standing there like, I don't speak Wookiee. Yeah. Like, he's doing the Lassie thing with her like, oh, Chewbacca's in trouble? Is that it? I think I'm getting it. I don't have time for this right now, Mala, because I'm obviously too important. I obviously don't even have time for R2 doing the task that I probably told R2 I need to have done.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just thought that was interesting. It's like calling everybody the frantic mother of the 80s.
Anytime,
you know what my kids at?
Anytime Chewbacca stays out late for a drink with Han.
Yeah, but Han and Chewbacca get in trouble, like, all the time, so that's not surprising at all.
Well, yeah, and this kind of, like, made me question a little bit because I don't remember Luke being able to communicate with Chewie at all, like in the first movie.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, it was very basic, but he always communicated through Han because Han was the only one that could understand him.
In fact, him and Chewie don't form any sort of friendship until close to the end of the first movie. And even then, he doesn't know how to communicate with Wookiees. He actually starts picking up on the Wookiee language, like you said, about the second movie. Towards the third movie, you see him able to actually communicate, probably because he was hanging out in the holiday special with so many Wookiees and got to learn their language.
Well, yeah, he probably got super drunk on Life Day
and
just like spent 7 hours trying to communicate with somebody. Yeah, it's learning by immersion, man. Yeah.
Are we going chronologically? Because I'd really like to talk about Life Day.
Yeah, we're going chronologically.
Well, I'll let you talk first
about Life Day. Let me see. Hamill talking to the care. Wookiee smiles. I have no idea what that means.
It was no different.
Mark Hamill says, you know,
oh, give us
that
a smile.
Chewbacca is going to be really upset if he comes home to like a frowny face and like really like upset wife. Let's see that pretty smile. And she smiles and it's like, oh my God, that's so ugly.
Yeah. And it's just like also so much like misogyny in that one line.
Oh yeah. Like
suck it up. Just
it's your
for
job
him.
To be happy.
Right. I was surprised she wasn't wearing pearls and vacuuming at the same time
with her hair and curls.
That would have been pretty
Wookiee stilettos on her feet.
With a Wookiee Jersey accent.
Oh, wow. What the hell? The dubbing was kind of off too. I don't know if that was just because you can only find this on like YouTube or like back channels because, like we said before, with the exception of the cartoon, which we'll talk about in a little bit, there's never been a re-release of this. And Lucas has said he never plans to allow this to be re-released.
I will say that after that scene, when she calls up the traitor, and you get to meet for the first time this traitor personality.
On Wookiee Planet C, which isn't even the name of the planet system. It's not called the Wookiee system.
So he's standing in this shop, and this Imperial guy, I think this is the first introduction to the weirdest helmet that's ever existed. I don't think that it appeared in the first movie, but maybe it did. Maybe I'm not remembering correctly.
The Imperial communications officer helmet.
Yeah, I don't think it was in the first. Maybe it was. I'm not remembering correctly.
It definitely looks like Dark Helmet. Like
it does. So you've got one of those guys in the huge, ridiculous helmets, and he has the weirdest accent and the most like stiff moving, just weird in general. Like, he stands too close to things and stares at them for way too long.
Yeah.
And then so our traitor, which is supposed to be, you know, this rebel operative that's, you know, in disguise as a traitor, sells this guy a personal groomer. And the way that he defines the personal groomer is just ridiculous.
Yeah, that it'll, you know, trim your hair. It'll like basically cook your breakfast and do your dishes for you. And recite the entire Imperial code, you know, because that's important though.
It's a personal groomer. It's got to keep you clean.
Yeah.
Like, don't break any laws.
my favorite line of the movie probably is, he's talking to Mala in code because the Imperial officer's standing right behind him. And, he says, "So, oh, you're waiting for that rug from the woman, right? Oh, yeah, she definitely. It's beautiful. You may say she did it by hand, solo."
So stupid.
Oh man. Oh gosh.
It's one of those like you just like stare for a moment and go, "That just happened. That's yeah.
Yep.
I don't even." Moving on.
And then we get Mama Bear cooking in the kitchen, which is a ridiculous, ridiculous scene. She's watching this cooking show,
which I loved,
which is like a mock of Julia Child. And it's this four-armed woman who's doing this. What is it? Stir, whip, 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 stir.
Which I'm pretty sure she's played by a man.
That scene was just so horrific that I just wiped it from my mind. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh. It reminded me of Miss Doubtfire.
Yeah, I said the same thing. I think that you know, I actually had a conversation with somebody at work today about this, and I said that I thought that maybe it may have inspired Robin Williams on Miss Doubtfire, but then he said that it was a... spoof of Julia Child, so maybe that Robin Williams was actually inspired by Julia Child, and it just has a common ancestor, basically.
Since it only aired once, it's pretty unlikely that all of these very you know, famous actors actually watched it, because the first Star Wars movie came out, and yeah, it was a box office hit, but this was very much so like not advertised.
It did spawn two really important questions, I thought, when she was cooking. How do Wookiees avoid eating hair? And what how do their guests?
They just deal with it. Han never stays for dinner.
Yeah, I feel like the guests are just really polite because they don't want their arms ripped off.
Yeah, that makes sense. It sucked to be a Wookiee's best friend. I'll just say that much. I'd bring my own food. I'd bring Thai, not fighters.
You like show up and you have enough for them too, which is like a gigantic bucket of food, just so that you don't have to eat their food.
Gigantic dented work bucket of food.
Did you see the difference of size in the meat that the alien instructor was using? And hers was like this big old chunk sitting on the cutting board.
She's like, they have like state-of-the-art, quote unquote, technology in their house. Like, Grandpa's got a little virtual reality machine, which we'll get to in a second. And
well, also the kid.
And the kid's got his own thing. And the mom is cooking in this water pail of a metal bucket. Like, I don't understand. I get that you want to make it look alien, but that doesn't mean that you have to make them cook like they're making food for pigs.
But also, like, not everyone can afford a MasterChef 9000, okay?
Okay. That's why they have cooking shows.
Yeah, that's right.
So then friend Merchant shows up at the house and gives Grandpa Itchy his Life Day present a little early. And it's another little cassette that he plugs into Grandpa Itchy's personal holographic mental projection machine. And Mike and I have a little disagreement about this, unless he was being completely sarcastic, which is possible. I definitely say that Itchy was watching space porn.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call it space porn as much as it was like space relaxation. I feel like she's a very intimate masseuse that probably also can give you happy endings if you so choose, but you don't have to.
See, I think she's a VI escort. And yeah, because
VI,
VI, virtual intelligence versus artificial intelligence. So like pre-programmed to have certain algorithms performed based on certain types of input.
Right.
So she consistently said, I'm your fantasy. I'm what you desire. Right. So on and so forth.
I would more assume that it is literally there's a selected profile that you choose from like based on creation. The body type. Yes, exactly. The body type and the face type you choose, you get output. And right. then the output is this woman who says what they think you want to hear, which is, you know, apparently he got exactly what he wanted.
Which was a
based
upon
the noises he was making. Yeah, he was making some very interesting Wookiee noises.
Well, I still think it would be cool if it was a sentient AI that knew it was only going to be alive as long as you were jerking off to it. And that would basically make anybody who used one of those things a violent psychopath.
Right.
I feel like that's the Sith in you talking.
Yes. I mean, like I said at the beginning of the episode, all hail our imperial overlords. And
I missed that part.
Yeah. All bow to the power of the dark side.
Well, I mean, the dark side does have cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but the good side has Wookiee cookies.
Here we go on a tangent. So let's get back to what you describe as holoporn.
Holoporn. So yes, Itchy's jerking it in the family room, in the middle of the family room. Mala's still being all worried about Chewie and Han. So she calls another very important person who shouldn't have time to answer her calls, the leader of the rebellion, Princess Leia. And Leia doesn't understand her at all. C-3PO has to translate for her. And we get a line where Leia says, to the merchant who's translating back for Leia, because she can't be bothered to have an interpreter between them, says, I'm sure you'll take care of my friends until their leader returns. Now, I don't know if she's talking about Han or if she's talking about Chewie, but either way, saying their leader sounded a little weird to me, especially coming from like a white human talking to, you know, the more indigenous Wookiee people.
So I'm trying to remember the scene, and in my mind, I think she says something along the lines of, take care of my friends and until the leader returns or their leader returns, indicating, I think, actually Luke.
If I remember correctly, she actually says on the holocall that – or not on the holocall, but later when her and Mark Hamill show up, it's more like a surprise. Like, we decided to come anyway. Like, to me, it didn't seem like she had – there was any precedent for Mark Hamill showing up there to begin Maybe. With, and it just, I don't know, it seemed a weird line. Like, I'm sure you can take care of my friends until they're, you know, until Chewbacca arrives, until her husband arrives or his father arrives. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, leader just sounded like a weird word choice to me.
Maybe. Maybe it was just poor development of, you know, the lines by whoever wrote this, which wouldn't be outside of what this work represents. Like, just overall just terribleness.
And then we get Declan's favorite part. Not really, but we get a little Jefferson airplane in a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Sounded pretty cool in Double Time.
Yeah.
Yep. Another scene that was about 4 minutes long and just
singing.
Yeah, it was like a music video. Like, I think this was the promo to get MTV on the on the station.
It
was a Holovid, brah.
So like the actual Star Wars lore behind this, even though this movie is no longer canon, is there this transmitter is actually picking up a signal from a concert hall ship that's traveling around the galaxy on tour. So this is actually a live performance. And that's why the Imperial dude was so excited when he was sitting down watching it.
Yeah.
Which is kind
of
cool.
That's
but
a lot of lore you have to know to understand that, though. Like,
but they explain
true.
It
yeah, I'm.
Yeah, it's all explained in Wookiee. She yells at him. She's like, dude, that's my concert.
I should have been there. Instead, I'm here with the child and old ass man.
And as we just alluded to, there are Imperials in this house because they have started a system by system or a system wide search for the rebels. And that system-wide search, the entire solar system, somehow starts with Chewbacca's house.
Of course.
They got a lot of...
Where else would you start?
I guess they were kind of instrumental in destroying the Death Star, but I just... It was just... it's one of those hang-a-lantern-on-it moments.
So you think about how much time they had to actually set up a storyline for this, and it seemed very rushed and thrown together. And that's why they had so many musicals in between each scene, because they had to kind of connect all the conglomeration of bullshit that made no sense together. And that's how they did it through the
conglomeration of bullshit that makes no sense is a very good tagline for this movie, I think.
I agree too.
We also then get little Lumpy gets scared and freaks out because the stormtroopers are going to go search his room, and his mom sits him down with his favorite cartoon, which again doesn't make sense because he watches a cartoon that is starring Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Han Solo, and Chewbacca, like the leaders of the Rebel Alliance, you know, as far as the Imperials are concerned. He's watching a cartoon that exists within this universe about them being chased by a bounty hunter. And even if that wasn't weird enough, like, that's the worst thing to give this kid right now because he's freaking out that his dad's missing. Like, hey, your dad's not here yet, but watch this thing about him getting hunted down by a bounty hunter.
Yeah, just remember he's been in worse situations.
Yeah. Oh, and then can we talk really quick about how the stormtroopers did nothing on the bottom floor of the house, but as soon as they went in the kid's room, they tore it apart.
They wanted to see his little soul break.
True.
They really go behind the heartless aspect of the Imperials in this movie.
Yeah, when you're a stormtrooper, man, you take your victories when you can.
Stupid kid, I never got Life Day presents.
Yeah, notice.
Yeah, so they just like toss that kid's room, dude.
Yeah.
And like the only commentary I can take away from that is they're like, hey, kids, you think it's bad when your parents send you up to clean your room? What if, like, the Empire showed up at your house and tossed your room? That wouldn't be very cool, would it? Like, that's the only commentary I can take away.
I do got to say, I don't know if it hit Declan the same way because he was watching it in Double Time, but when little Lumpy goes up to his room later and, like, finds his Bantha torn in half and just, like, cradles it and puts it in bed and puts its blankie over it and kisses it, that super got to me. I'm not going to lie. Like, I had a super awe moment. And
definitely played that part really well.
Not proud of that.
Right. Well, like, so sorry, real quick, before you make a point, Mike, like when the stormtrooper went in there and picked up the Bantha, I was like, oh shit, there's going to be like a some sort of device or something, like Chewie fucked up and put something in there. And then he tears the head off the Bantha for no reason. And like my first, I said it out loud. I was like, not the Bantha. And like, of course the kid goes in there. First thing he does is like, my fucking Bantha. Yeah, it's adorable.
Oh man.
I guess it didn't get me as bad as it got you guys. So a quick like mention of lore here. So Lumpy actually does grow up And after the second Death Star is destroyed, Lumpy, Chewie, and the gang overthrow the Imperial blockade on Kashyyyk, which is the Wookiee homeworld, and they liberate the Wookiees from Imperial control.
Good so, for Lumpy.
That's so, yeah. Wookiee
that
wicked.
Tiny spark of Imperial hatred from ripping his bantha head off.
Yep, he gets back at him, that's for sure.
By ripping their heads off.
Yeah, well, that'd be so great if, like, probably. Literally that's what he was known for in the war, was ripping Imperials' heads off and just, like, putting a blanket over them.
Why do they call you Lumpy? Because I sleep on a bed of heads. It's kind of lumpy.
So the other thing we were talking about was the animated right. Portion. Right, so
the thing that he's watching on his little personal hologram.
The best part of the movie.
Which, I mean, honestly, I'm really big into cartoons of this particular era, just because the animation was almost all done by hand. They didn't have any computing software to go in and fill in the mm-hmm. the blank frames. So that means that every single scene that you see in that animated portion is hand-drawn, yeah. And there's no merging, which means animations between the movements – frame by frame, actually all had to be drawn and colored and, you know, printed properly.
Let me just interject really quick. So this for you and for any of our listeners, this is a plug. I'm not being paid to say this at all. This is just personal opinion. If you love that kind of animation, if you haven't seen Nova Seed yet, you should totally watch Nova Seed, because it was like, I think, a pair of brothers that did this, and they literally hand drew the entire thing.
10 years.
Took 10 years, and they did all of the voices and sound effects themselves. And like, even down to ships flying through the air and walking on the ground, like, they're making the sounds with their voices. And it is so raw, but it really astounding at the same time. So that my suggestion, go online, find Nova Seed. I think it's only a couple bucks off their website. And in my opinion, it's worth it.
Absolutely. I've seen it, too. It is good.
Okay.
Good.
We do get this cartoon.
So the cartoon, which is actually done pretty well in the graphics of that day and era, the genre that existed. And we get introduced to Boba Fett for the first time. This is the first time Boba Fett has ever been seen.
And the most lines he gets.
Mostly he just doesn't come across as a badass bounty hunter. Like, he does ride a really cool monster at the beginning.
A snail without its shell.
Yeah, that eats Luke Skywalker's ship when it crash lands on this little watery planet. And but mostly, like, his dialogue is really crappy for a bounty hunter. He just says friend a bunch, like,
yeah, he's let's go being do very this, friend. Quote unquote deceptive about, you know, trying to help Chewie and Han Solo so that they lead him back to the rebel base.
Anyway, it just, like, it kind of ruined the whole entry of this iconic character, because this is literally the first time you get to see this bounty hunter. Actually, I think the first time bounty hunters are even really introduced into the Star Wars, like, movie lore. And it just falls kind of flat the mm-hmm. way that they introduce him in the cartoon.
Yeah, the whole ending of it didn't really make sense to me either. Like, I didn't really understand why he led them all the way back with the medicine, and then why he didn't, like, do anything like, hey, they're turning on me, I'll just shoot them all and claim the reward. Like,
well, that doesn't sound like a children's cartoon.
Yeah.
Shame on you, Jeremy.
I know, I'm a terrible one. Right, hail the Emperor.
Hail the Void.
Hail the Void. And yeah, cartoon Han Solo's face is so ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Super ridiculous.
I think it's very accurate, though.
Really?
That's what his face looks
you
like.
Think that's yeah. it's perfect?
That's like the perfect Han Solo face. In fact, like, if I ever meet Harrison Ford in person, I hope that I have a picture of that in my wallet so I can pull it out and show it to him just to see the reaction on his face.
And then get a picture with him with that picture over his face.
Just get him to sign that picture. Just like, hey, this is
either you. Yeah, get him to sign that picture, which is probably impossible. Or just, like, stand next to him and ask him to try and make a face that looks very similar to the face in that comic.
You should take him on a little, like, street date and then get a caricature drawn of him and see if it matches.
Oh, my God. And then have it be that.
And then burn a hole through its chest where he is.
Ooh. Oh, God. Why do you always got to go so dark side on me, man?
You know why. This is why we don't play Star Wars The Old Republic together.
10 morality.
So anyway, then little Lumpy goes upstairs and he's saddened by everything. But then he remembers that merchant friend brought him a little transmitter kit that he has to put together. So he puts on the instructional video. And again, we get another ridiculous side movie where Android Count Demoney tries to tell him how to set this up, but he's an android and his processor is being disturbed. So it's this very bizarre vaudevillian mime act that he does. And yeah, just another thing that didn't make a whole lot of sense.
I think the whole holiday special, it just boils down to what I said before. Like, it's a musical for sure, but ultimately it's just a string of bullshit loosely connected together. Like, yeah. And it has some Star Wars lore, like, peppered throughout.
Speaking of, we then get a Imperial broadcast that is required listening for all Imperials coming to you from Tatooine? Like, of all the Imperial planets that you would send a, you know, a full length message out, it's from Tatooine.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a curfew is being placed on Tatooine at first. And this is where it gets really, really confusing because it's a message saying that there's a curfew on Tatooine, but it's required listening for all Imperials throughout the galaxy. And then we get Bea Arthur as a bartender on Tatooine trying to get her patrons to go home. And there's this like weird stalker guy who thinks he's in love with her because she said those six words, something like "come again, I'll see you tomorrow" or something.
Yeah.
And so anyway, he's obsessed with her and he drinks through the top of his head, and it was just very hokey and bizarre. So she tries to get her patrons to leave and they won't leave. They're all kind of being dicks to her. And so she has to give them all a free round and sing them a song and Pied Piper them out of her door. And so yep. I did write down a couple things. I did love Bea Arthur. I did actually think that this scene was very well done. The music was done. She was great. The extras were a little wonky. But
the Cantina song Slow Down was actually kind of cool.
Yeah, I actually think I'm going to try and find a download of this. It's definitely not going to be on iTunes. I'm going to have to probably find it in some of the dustier corners of the internet.
Yeah. You probably might even have to cook it out of the show itself. Like, yeah. Just take a little clip out of the show. Because, like, I highly doubt that was recorded anywhere where you could get at it, considering Lucas wanted this piece of work to be burned.
Yeah, he wanted to sweep it under the rug. And so like, stalker guy comes at her. She tells him she's not really interested. He comes at her again. She says, "I'm not looking for anything romantic." And then she basically shows him that she says those same six words to anybody leaving the bar. And she succeeds in marching all these people out of her bar, turns around, and he's behind the bar, and he hands her a flower. Like, babe, you don't need another musical number. You need a taser, and you need to call, the Imperials to come pick this asshole up.
Right. And I feel like the whole point of this being aired on Imperial television was your life could be worse. You could be stationed on Tatooine.
Yeah. Not long after that, we still have one stormtrooper inside the house. I was waiting for little Chewie to just tear his arms off or his head. Now that we've established that that's the lore we would like to see when they get into a little tussle on the balcony and
Chewie comes home.
Yeah. Chewie shows up and stormtrooper looks like he's about to shoot him. Han Solo sneaks up from behind and they get in a short little tussle. And what happens to the stormtrooper?
He gets pushed through the banister and down.
That the little Wookiee walked on earlier.
Yeah. The paper banister that just crumbled to bits when he hit it.
You don't know.
Well, I mean, it is a drawing of a treehouse, so it makes sense.
Yeah, it was literally just pen and paper.
Pretty sure I saw that treehouse in like those old school child shows.
It was very cartoony. And then we get to see Harrison Ford interact with Chewie's family, where he tells them that they're just like a family to him. Then we get little love scene between Mala and Chewie. I wrote down Wookiee love is gross.
Wookiee love. I mean, I don't know. Two rugs get together and magic happens. And then a little smaller rug pops out.
Friction causes fires.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of static electricity in the wintertime.
Do you know?
But, I mean, there's enough of it where they can actually power a lot of the high-grade batteries they have in their house.
I guess you could always tell when, you know, which Wookiees are really into rough sex, because they would just, they would be the only ones with patches of skin on them.
Yeah, I guess.
What if a Wookiee was into shaving? What would they look like?
What would they look like?
Have you ever seen one of those long-haired dogs that have the smushed face shaved?
No.
It's like that, probably.
I don't want to think about it.
It's too bad that you haven't seen it. just look it up on Google Images. Anybody who's listening, feel free to look it up on Google Images. You will be disturbed. It won't be something you can wipe away from your mind. Like, you'll want to set your eyes on fire.
And so then the Imperial captain calls into the missing stormtrooper because they lost signal on his communicator. And Merchant Friend has to step in and pretend that... he basically tells the Imperial officer that his stormtrooper was left behind. He robbed the family, robbed the merchant, and then took off for the hills. And the Imperial officer like goes, "Oh yeah, that's a totally legit story. Cool.
It happens all the time.
These Imperial stormtroopers always robbing people and defecting. Like, we'll send out a search party looking for him."
That's actually kind of concerning, though. Like, maybe that does happen that much, you know?
Right, which would be, you know, if I were the Emperor, I would have sealed that shit up. Like, you electricity fry the first person you find that does that on national. You make it one of those Imperial broadcasts that's required viewing, and you look straight into the camera and say, "Any fucking questions?" Like, I'm a better Sith than the Emperor.
You're so evil.
We get to
one day Jeremy's going to become the new Emperor. Just letting you guys know.
Wouldn't that be the day? We get to see a glance of what Life Day is, where everybody picks up a glowy snow globe and puts it together in family time.
And then they transmit their body and mind through time and space
into a cave.
On a golden archway into a cave of light.
It's Stairway
in
to Heaven.
Space. It wasn't a stairway. It was a flat surface. There was no ascension happening. And they just
went the stairs from were in their mind
to walking in robes. And Jeremy made a point of this before that, you know, like Wookiees don't ever wear clothes except for, you know, Chewie's bandolier,
which is basically for ammo and stuff like
bow
that.
Staff,
and food, yeah.
And a bow rifle. And then they walk through this door, and then they're apparently on this new planet where there's also Leia and Luke and Han and all these other Wookiees all celebrating Life Day. Like, I don't know if they, like, went to the center of their planet or if it was, like...
Well, Mike, you know a little bit about Life Day. Why don't you give us a little background real quick?
So, Life Day is a Wookiee-celebrated event that holds dear the tenets of their culture. Basically, Life Day is about joy, harmony, and family. Of like the Wookiee tradition. Now, to explain the scene, what I believe they were trying to represent is the family holds their little orbs together and they hang out for a little bit. And then they actually cut to the scene where they've already got their robes on and they're hanging out with all the other Wookiees in their culture. Now, Life Day, similar to other holidays that exist in our time frame, are associated with the overcoming of enslavement after the Wookiees break free. I talked a little bit about that earlier when Lumpy becomes an adult and Wookiee and the gang save Kashyyyk, the Wookiee homeworld.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Life Day is a thing that is lore in Star Wars, even though this movie is not. But in actual Star Wars lore, it's kind of cool because it does, they do describe how like closely knit Wookiee community is, mm-hmm. and how peaceful and harmonious and just like chill Wookiees are. Well, because in a lot of the Star Wars lore, you see Wookiees just rampaging and beating the shit out of people. But that's not really what they're about.
Right. They're warriors when they have to be. And
bear sloth.
And there's maybe backstory or back lore that happened that explains why they wear robes to this ceremony that they do. But I'm 95% sure it's because they couldn't afford a cavern full of Wookiee costumes to be made.
Heads, hands, and feet only.
Heads, hands, and feet. Like, boom, done. See, we just saved 80% of the budget. And then probably my least favorite part of the movie, dear Carrie Fisher, may she rest in peace, shows up with Mark Hamill and Han Solo and Chewie, and they're all in the cavern celebrating Life Day, and she starts singing a song about Life Day to the tune of the Star Wars theme behind her. And and in my mind, I just took over the mind of a Wookiee standing inside that cavern and just goes up and backhands her, be like, "You shut up, human. This is our holiday. Like, what do you think you're doing, little white princess, walking into our sacred ceremony and you start singing a song like,
oh, I'm sorry, Mala. Did you want to sing it?"
I would have actually been more impressed with 4 minutes of Wookiee singing. Then oh man,
I just got a mental picture of like a chorus of Wookiees in the red robes, so yeah, all hitting different tunes.
I totally thought that was gonna happen when they all started like moving around when she was singing. I was like, oh, Wookiee chorus.
No, and they're just literally snaking their way through the cavern.
Yeah, and they're just like, we're all leaving now.
And then it zooms in on Chewie's face, and he just stares directly at the camera with his mouth sort of half open. And we start seeing clips from the holiday special and from the first Star Wars movie, sort of him recounting his tale up until this point. And I swear, like, at this point, I realize that the holiday special, if anything else, is really just showcasing Chewbacca's PTSD, because like, you know, it's showing the peaceful life that these Wookiees live. And then he just like is standing there in this cavern while everybody's celebrating love and joy and harmony. And all he's thinking about is the danger and death that he's seen as a smuggler on the run since he met Luke Skywalker, basically.
But, you know, in Wookiee, he's thinking, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
So the lore behind Han Solo and the Wookiee, Chewbacca, is that Han finds the Wookiee and frees him from Empire slavery. So then Chewbacca owes Han a life debt, which is why he's always hanging out with Han.
Mm. Yeah, that's definitely one of the white guy throwaways for indigenous characters back in the day. The blood debt.
But Han, you know, drops him off at his family every now and then.
Right. And this is...
Yeah, well, for every life day.
And this has got to be, you know, it's got to have a religious sort of family-oriented angle at the end, because it is, after all, a holiday special coming out in December, so we get to see the Wookiee family pray over a meal at the very end.
We bow their heads.
And, yeah, bow their heads and join hands.
And the merchant brings them gifts wrapped in paper.
Yeah. So, I mean... They never say Christmas in it. They do always say Life Day or holiday. So, you know, points to the secularism of Life Day as it was in the 1970s. And then, Mike, you're going to talk a little bit about where this is sort of fitting in and what happens next there.
Yeah, well, there's actually two things. So the first thing is related to the Star Wars universe and the movies that come out after this one. So the original plan, because obviously the first movie discusses, you know, the creation of the first Death Star and then its destruction happens. But the original plan was the second Death Star to be built over the Kashyyyk homeworld, the Wookiee homeworld. So that this, I feel like this holiday special could have tied into that. But because it was so bad, I feel like it just convinced Lucas to give up on Wookiees and try out like smaller furry human animals that eat humans. I feel like a bunch of fans make allegations of this. I haven't found like actual text that said that has been like proven to be true, but it makes sense, right? Like yeah, it would make sense.
I mean, it's actually kind of an interesting, and me and you, I think, could have a whole beautiful conversation about Star Wars. Maybe when we start our role play podcast.
I'm looking forward to
the contrast between the Wookiees. Like the Wookiees are this super peaceful race unless you fucking cross their line, and then they just like go apeshit. Whereas the Ewoks, like at the end of the battle, are literally cooking and eating stormtroopers. Like and making bongos out of their skulls. Like they may be the cuter, furrier versions of the Wookiees, but they're freaking savage, man. Anyway, that's pretty much the end of Star Wars. Any final thoughts, Declan?
No, if you have to watch it in double speed.
Watch it in double speed.
So it can be over?
Yeah, it'll be over quicker, believe me.
And how about a rating? What would you give the Star Wars Holiday Special?
I would give it one Wookiee bandolier.
One Wookiee bandolier. Okay, Mike, how about a rating?
A rating. I'm gonna say two wooden, like perfectly carved wooden X-wings.
I would probably give this a solid 7. Those 7 would be stir whip, stir whip, whip, stir stir. And that's 7 out of the many Bothans that died to bring us the plans for the second Death Star.
Makes sense.
That's it for this bonus episode of Really Shitty Movie Podcast. Thanks again to my my co-hosts on this ridiculous journey of Star Wars the Holiday Special. Oh man, you furball. And thanks again for joining us, listeners. If you have a suggestion, again, you can contact us, or if you just want to tell us what you thought of the Holiday Special, or if you may have missed anything, you can give us an email at watchthis@rsmpod.com, and or you can go join our Facebook group, RSM Pod, and send us a message through there. We will be back next week with an episode, our third episode in the series, not including this bonus episode, where we review Time Rider. So we'll see you again. Thanks again to my co-hosts.
Thank you.
Call Jar Jar Binks.
Oh God.
Oh man. Okay, that's a wrap.